When you really focus on what matters, right, which is that employee happiness and the franchisee happiness, it's really easy to take care of the customers and get more customers because the core is that real strong energetic force. And I think people miss that, right? I think every company should actually recognize that their number one most important metric is their employee happiness. It's the employee net promoter score. If you have super happy employees, they'll take care of your customers, which means you will have really happy customers. But if you're so obsessed about your customer, your employees will feel underappreciated and overworked and always stressed, and you're never happy with them. But if they realize you're so engaged with them, they'll take care of the customer for you.
So you have a passion for fitness and the desire to start your own business, but launching a massively successful fitness business is extremely complex. The systems, operations, hiring, firing, coaching, sales, and marketing are critical to success. Where do you even start? This show will give you the answers. Here is Bedros Koulian and Bryce Henson, your hosts of the Fitness Franchise Podcast, a show dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs launch and grow successful gyms.
Hey friends, welcome back to another incredible episode as today's guest is a dear friend of mine, business coach and mentor who has an amazing rap sheet. So here we go. He is known around the world as the CEO Whisperer. In fact, companies purchase his books in bulk for their employees to learn from. And his CEO Alliance is helping hundreds of CEOs grow their businesses by growing their second in commands. Now he has 25 years of mind shifting experience as a business growth guru, having helped build two $100 million companies by the time he was 42. Now, what he did was so impressive, it became a case study at the Harvard Business School. Now, as such, he's coached major players such as Elon Musk's brother, Kemba Musk, and now is a coach to a monarchy and a big four wireless carrier, as well as dozens of CEOs and COOs around the world. His work has helped his companies be featured in the Associated Press, Bloomberg, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Fortune, as well as TV shows like Oprah. And the publisher of Forbes magazine said, "Cameron Harold is the best speaker that I have ever heard." Cameron Harold, my friend, welcome to the show. Super pumped to have you.
Hey, Bryce. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Good to see you again, too.
Likewise. Holy smokes, man. That was an incredible rap sheet. You are a very accomplished guy. Did I hit it all?
I think so. Probably missed all the bad stuff, but it's all good.
Awesome. Well, we got a lot to cover and nice to connect again. Before we get down to it, give our audience the backstory.
Wow, backstory. So I was groomed as an entrepreneur right from the get-go. My father was an entrepreneur, as were both sets of grandparents. They groomed the three of us in our family to be entrepreneurs. And for the last 25 years, my brother and sister and I really have all been running our own companies. So right from the early, early age, I was an entrepreneur. I started coaching entrepreneurs back in 1989. So I actually started coaching before coaching was a thing. If you think that the International Federation of Coaches and Coach U both started 4 years after I started coaching entrepreneurs. So really, there was no such thing as business coaching when I was doing it. I'd coached 120 entrepreneurs by the time I was 28 years old. Got known for building a couple of really fast growing companies, one that went on to become the largest residential house painting company in the world, that was College Pro Painters. Another went on to become the largest collision repair chain in the world, and that's Gerber Auto Collision in the US, Boyd Auto Body in Canada. I built a private currency company, and then I went on to join my best friend and took his company and really grow it. I came into 1-800-GOT-JUNK as the 14th employee. When I left 6.5 years later, we had 3,100 employees system-wide, ranked as the number two company in all of Canada to work for, you know, loads of awards, et cetera, et cetera. So left there about 15 years ago, 14 and a half years ago, and started coaching entrepreneurs, real companies, typically 50 to 500 employees all over the world. I've done paid speaking events in 26 countries on 6 continents, written 5 books. I've got a podcast called the Second in Command Podcast, and a dad, father of two great boys and great girlfriend, and I love travel, and that's about it.
That's about it. Well, that's a lot to unpack, and for our audience as well. Cameron, you're a coach and done coaching work for our franchise as well. So a lot to unpack there. Before I actually drill into this, I'm actually going to come out with a bit of aggressive question, but what would you say for all those accolades, which we'll, you know, kind of get into in a bit, what's your zone of genius?
I think my zone of genius is really helping entrepreneurs reverse engineer their dreams. So when an entrepreneur is clear on where they're going, I can actually reverse engineer that really quickly and show them how to get there. So I end up showing them the shortcuts. You know, I look at most entrepreneurs almost like a fly trying to get out the window, that they're going to try really hard, but they keep banging their head on the window, and there's usually an easier path. And I like giving them the shortcuts, the easier paths to get to the success and where they're going. So I tend to see the future very clearly when they show it to me, and I can unpack that for them.
That requires a lot of vision as well. Do you have like a framework on how you coach certain executives? Is there a certain process that you go through?
Yeah, there's a process that's actually now just become a registered trademark. So in the last 2 weeks, it was actually Vivid Vision is a concept that I coined, and it's now become a registered trademark. It's the idea is, and it's something that I learned from an Olympic coach, it's the process of visualization that athletes and high-performance athletes use to visualize themselves performing the event. We teach entrepreneurs to do the same thing with their company, to visualize what their company looks like, acts like, and feels like 3 years in the future. And if they can see every aspect of their company, almost as if they were walking around their offices, kind of looking in on Zoom calls, describing everything that they see, describing the customer interactions, employee interactions, describing marketing and IT and finance and operations, almost as if it's already come true, and they end up with a 4 or 5 page written description of their company in the future, we end up taking that and polishing it and making it really pop off the page. And that's what we help them reverse engineer. And we've now got entrepreneurs all over the world using that concept. In fact, Mind Valley next week is rolling out the Vivid Vision Quest to millions of people around the world to really expose people to this concept of the Vivid Vision.
Yeah, good on you. And the framework is actually, you communicate and articulate this in the book Vivid Vision, do you not?
Yeah, I do. I actually wrote about it in 3 of my books. So Vivid Vision, okay. The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs that I co-authored with Hal Elrod, and then my first book, Double Double, it's chapter 1 of that. So I cover it in different ways in all 3 of those. And then there's also a TEDx that I did. The third TEDx talk that I was asked to do is called Your Vision Statement Sucks. So if they look up my name and Your Vision Statement Sucks, they'll see a really great TEDx that describes the video as well, or the concept of the Vivid Vision.
Yeah, well, Cameron, interesting, before we met, and actually I think we met at our first mastermind meeting of our Fitbody Bootcamp franchise and then gravitated to business coaching. When we first met and when we started coaching together, I was the vice president. Now, as we talked offline, I've been promoted to the CEO position at Fitbody Bootcamp. But one thing that really stuck out was before we met was reading those 2 books, Miracle Morning and then Double Double. But it wasn't until that I read Vivid Vision that just like floored me. And I would say, that up until that point, because I also not only do I serve our franchise, the franchise headquarters in Southern California, but I have 2 local gyms as well. And by creating a Vivid Vision for my team, I actually go through that vision when I first did it about 3 years ago, based off our coaching and based off the book Vivid Vision. End up creating the Vivid Vision, laying it down to my team, and it's something on a yearly basis that I just kind of circle, up. Do we do a training and go through? And I can tell you that has just been game changing, for my organization, just getting everyone, on board and rowing in that direction. So I was just curious if you can kind of, showcase maybe some other success stories or drill into the concept a little bit more.
Yeah. So once you end up with this 4 or 5 page document describing your company in its finished state, and you give it to a copywriter to polish it up and a designer to add your design elements to it so it feels like your brand, I like actually sharing it with all of my employees every quarter and having them reread the Vivid Vision every quarter so they're focused on where we're going but executing on today. I also like sending it out to my customers, my suppliers, my partners, so that they all read that Vivid Vision as well. Because if everyone who touches your company is familiar with where you're going and they're excited about that future, they all kind of conspire to make that come true. And the future is always a lot more exciting than today, right? It's a lot more exciting what you're building than what you already have. Yeah. So you tell the media about it. You just share that Vivid Vision with everyone. And in the early days, it sounds like you're a bit of an idiot sharing it because no one can see it coming true, right? It's almost like you're super excited about your home being completely painted and the painters are just showing up. Your house isn't painted yet, but you're all excited about how beautiful it looks because you can see it when it's finished. So you just keep sharing it and sharing it and sharing it. And the more that you do, everyone can then see what the CEO can see. So then they can all figure out together how to make it come true.
And how often do you recommend like a CEO or visionary updating that? Because I do it once a year, but you talk about sharing it once a quarter. And of course, things change, business is fluid, life is fluid. So how often, should our listeners, if they're going to drill into the concept, be kind of not only creating, but updating their vision?
Yeah, they should only update it every 3 years. So let's say that right now you were drafting your December 31st, 2024 Vivid Vision, right? So you're leaning out 3 years. You're going to be rolling it out to all of your employees around the end of December, early January. So it's that 3 year push. Every 3 years you want to update that. So you really want to lock it in, unless there's a complete and utter massive shift to your world. Like maybe you're not allowed to have your gyms open for a year because of COVID, or maybe there's a global financial crisis and the mortgage market shuts down. But for the most part, there's enough of a certainty and enough of a direction that you don't need to change it. Mm-hmm. The key is to keep pushing towards that 3 year vision. But if you keep changing it all the time, people feel like you're kind of making it up as you go, instead of really committing to that locked and loaded 3 year at Vivid Vision.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay. Additionally, in a book that we didn't actually address is a new book that you just came out, I think about 18 months or 2 years ago, I think right before COVID, was Free PR. And I'm curious if you can kind of short tell a little bit, because I want to go back to College Pro Painters and also 1-800-GOT-DRUNK, and we'll really hit on those hard. But I know you really did an incredible job of really getting both of those companies incredible press. So if you can talk a little bit about Free PR and really how it helped both companies I just referred to.
Well, it's interesting. So I was taught how to generate free press coverage when I was quite young. I was 20 years old. I was running a house painting company for College Pro Painters. And they just told us that all we should do is phone the newspaper and tell them we had a story about us starting our own business, and they would tend to write about you. So I didn't know any better. I just called a journalist from the newspaper and said, hey, I got a good story. And he said, okay. I told him the idea. He said, it sounds great. I said, I'm painting a place like 10 blocks from your office. Why don't you come over? He said, okay. Came over, asked some more questions, took a picture. I was in the newspaper the next day. So I was like, well, it's that simple. So I did it again the week after with a TV show. I landed that as well. And I didn't know any better until like 10 years later, after teaching all these entrepreneurs, that's what you do. And they were all landing press. I didn't realize that you were supposed to use a PR firm, or you were supposed to use press releases. So at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, we followed that same path of just picking up the phone and connecting with journalists. We came up with five core stories that we pitched in every single city we operated in. And we would pitch the same story in Chicago for a week, and then we would move and pitch the same story in Boston and go through Chicago, San Francisco, like literally across the US like a wave. And we landed 5,200 individual unique stories about our company in 5 years, 6 years, sorry. So it was just that understanding that the media needs content. They can't afford to go out and find it. But then it's really understanding what to do with the press coverage you get. You know, most people think, oh, it's great, I'm in Forbes magazine. You know, I've been in the physical print edition of every major magazine, including Forbes. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm online, sure, offline in the print edition, but it's what do you do with that that's important, right? So you get a link to it, you put it on your media page of your website. You share the link 3 times a year on Facebook, 3 times on LinkedIn, 3 times on Twitter. You email it out to your list once a quarter. You send it to the speakers bureaus. You ask your employees via a clickable link to share it on their social profiles. And then you buy ad traffic to those links to really push it out so that people are seeing the story and they're like, wow, you're everywhere. The reality is most people won't see the story unless you put it in front of them multiple times. Mm-hmm. And it's that third-party credibility that you're forcing in front of them that really powers your brand. So we call that in the book Free PR the digital trifecta, and how to take your earned media with your owned media and your paid media and have the convergence of those three things really blow up the brand.
Yeah. Interesting. Not only the value of getting PR, but leveraging that and amplifying that. And, you know, now I want to kind of dive into, you know, 1-800-GOT-JUNK a little bit more. And I know, you know, when I think of you, Cameron, I think of you as an author, as a coach, and then, you know, 1-800-GOT-JUNK and being on Oprah. So if you can maybe storytell, take us back to 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I know, you know, one of your close friends, Brian, who's a visionary, originally kind of started the company. You were COO for, I think, about 6 years. So you can take us through that path of really the story of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, if I can say that correctly, taking it from $2 million to over $100 million company, and then how you're able to, again, get media and then Oprah, and how that all kind of worked out.
Sure. So when I originally started with Brian, I was coming in to coach him and to coach his team to teach them what they needed to do to grow a successful franchise brand. They just sold their 12th franchise. They had no franchise training program, no franchise manual, no franchise sales program, no franchise marketing. Really didn't have a program. They just had an idea and got some people excited about it. He had a good base location that was doing well, and another one up in Toronto that was getting close to a million, but they didn't know how to build it and scale it. So in starting to coach his team, they realized they didn't have the skills to do it, and they asked me to come on full-time as their COO to help engineer that growth. The three things that I really focused on, the first one in that first couple of weeks was we raised our prices by 40%. The reality was no one was making money. The franchisees weren't making enough money. The head office wasn't making enough money. The guys in the trucks weren't making enough money. So everyone was working really, really hard, but no one can scale that. So we wanted to be more like the FedEx or the Starbucks of junk removal, which means we had to be more like a premium price product so that we had enough money to do everything and to make money and to drive more marketing and brand. Mm-hmm. Second thing that I wanted to do was turn the company into a little bit more than a business, a little bit less than a religion. I wanted to be in that zone of a cult where the culture was so strong that you could literally grow because of the cultural kind of energy that would shift off of that. So we really, really worked hard at that. We ended up ranking two times in a row as the number one company to work for in British Columbia. And then we ranked as the number two company in all of Canada to work for. So it was that obsession around that. The third was franchisee profitability, really making sure that our franchisees were happy and profitable. We ranked as the number one franchisor in the world in terms of franchisee engagement, positive 98% franchisee net promoter score. We beat McDonald's and Curbs and Subway and Quiznos, beat everybody. So that was powerful. And then the last one was, how do we drive more and more press coverage about our brand? Because we didn't have enough money for marketing, but we knew the third-party social proof would really power the growth. It would drive the culture. It would make the energy strong. So it was just that relentless push on those four things is what made us successful. And, yeah. You know, it takes a long time to get to the night before you become the overnight success story, right?
Totally. And speaking of that and kind of showcasing and sharing with our audience, when we first started coaching at our franchise at Fit Body Bootcamp, because of the focus on relentless focus of profitability and some of the other initiatives that, you know, you just know being an expert business coach, we were able to create our franchise advisory council, which is one innovation. We started then doing quarterly regional trainings called Elite Trainings. We've created a coaching and profitability department, and these are just a few of the things that our franchise basically created from the coaching and the experience that you just kind of lay down in point number three of your journey within 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Yeah. Well, and when you do that stuff, you know, when you really focus on what matters, right, which is that employee happiness and the franchisee happiness, it's really easy to take care of the customers and get more customers because the core is that real strong energetic force. And I think people miss that, right? I think every company should actually recognize that their number one most important metric is their employee happiness. It's the employee net promoter score. If you have super happy employees, they'll take care of your customers, which means you will have really happy customers. But if you're so obsessed about your customer, your employees will feel underappreciated and overworked and always stressed, and you're never happy with them. But if they realize you're so engaged with them, they'll take care of the customer for you.
Yeah, amen. That's huge. And that's very relevant to our audience who are interested in fitness and business and entrepreneurship. We're going to have teams and have, you know, groups of employees that need to work and really serve the mission and serve their clients. So now, on the same vein, again, within your experience and incredible success at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, when you synced up with Brian, the company was, again, $2 million in revenue. By the time you left, it was $100 million in revenue. You shared some of the strategies behind that. I want to, you know, inquire how you got landed on Oprah and really what doors that opened for you.
Sure. Well, it didn't actually open that many doors. The Oprah effect, you know, is there, but it's what you do with the Oprah story afterwards that really matters, right? So it's how many other news outlets you can talk about Oprah. It's how many franchise partners you can talk about Oprah. But we were landing mass media everywhere. So the way we actually got on Oprah, it's a funny story. We call it laddering up the media. It's the more media you get, the more media you'll get. Like, you just keep getting more. Mm-hmm. So we landed Fortune magazine, a half page article in Fortune. And then that helped us land an article in the USA Today, in the money section of the USA Today. Oprah was reading that article in the USA Today and saw the picture of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, had an idea for a story, brought it into her team and said, have you heard of these guys? And they started laughing, saying, have you heard of them? They won't stop calling us. They've been phoning us every week for like 13, 14 weeks. And they're pitching us and giving us all these stories. And she said, let's just do a story with them. So it was because we were using the same model to land Oprah as everybody else, right? We were phoning them, we were emailing them, we were sending them letters, we were giving them ideas on stories and trying to get them on a phone call. But because the other press was that third party credibility, that's what ended up opening the door.
Interesting. And then, but that in mind, though, you've been able to leverage that for years and years after. Would that be fair to say?
Exactly. You know, it's all about what you do with that. Like, so I think every press story you land is like a log. So if you've got four stories, whether it's Oprah, Forbes, Fortune, whatever, you got four logs just sitting on the ground. Mm-hmm. Now the key is, how do we light those logs on fire? So that's, how do you share them on your social media platforms? How do you email it out to your list? And remember, we landed Oprah in 2003. Facebook didn't launch until 4 years later. LinkedIn didn't have an ability to share anything until years later. Mm-hmm. There was no Twitter. There was no Instagram. So all we could do was tell people about that story. We couldn't even share it. There was no way. YouTube really hadn't even started in 2003. So there's nowhere to actually leverage that. But what you do with that story, and the more places you share it, the more places you talk about it, and then driving traffic to it so more people see it, that's where you get the real boom from.
Yeah. Incredible, man. Like, hats off. I still see 1-800-GOT-JUNK trucks rolling around, and you're the first person I think of. So job well. So that all said, though, and we've talked about, like, your incredible success and sharing some golden nuggets here. You know, for audiences thinking, man, this guy, anything and everything he touches puts to gold. Now, I want to be transparent and vulnerable. And I know, you know, from many of our coaching calls and conversations, you're very open about this. The tail end of your 1-800-GOT-JUNK is, it turns out, like, I don't know if it's a falling out, but, you know, ultimately you and Brian decide to kind of move different ways. Can you talk a little bit about what happened and also the challenges and the learning lessons through that experience?
Yeah, so we recognized about 3 years after I got there, 3 or 4 years, that we were going to start to need to level up our leadership team. We needed to get our leadership team up to the next level to continue our growth. So we had 6 members of the leadership team, and over 3 years, we replaced each of those members of the leadership team, and then I was effectively the last one to get replaced. My best friend, Brian, grabbed me on a Thursday morning in mid-May 2007, and he said, "I think we're done." And we both started to cry and realized that he was right. I was the guy to get us from 2 million to 106 million, but I wasn't the guy to take us from 106 million to a billion. So I left the organization. I did a speaking event for him 2 days later, did a bunch of other ones over the months for him. They took 12 months to find my replacement. They brought the former president of Starbucks in as my replacement. She came in and said, "What a cute little company." And when I was leaving, I'm like, "Oh my God, it's so big."
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she didn't last. She was only there a year, and then Brian fired her because of just some corporate politics was happening. It wasn't working out. She was the wrong culture fit. He took another 12 months and found a lifelong friend of mine, a guy that I started a fraternity with 34 years ago, Eric Church, to come in and join. And Eric's now been there for about 9 years as the second in command. And they went down from 106 million down to about 75 million due to the recession, global financial crisis, you know, all the restructuring. But now they're about a $450 million system-wide sales brand.
Wow, that's
Eric would have been horrible being the COO for the first 6.5 years, but he's been amazing for the last 9.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Well, now shifting gears to College Pro Painters, because again, you have a laundry list of credentials here. If you can share some visibility on basically how that opportunity came to be, what your role was, and again, some learning lessons and some big nuggets and takeaways for our audience.
Yeah, College Pro Painters, when I joined in 1986, was a franchisor operating in Canada and a few areas of Boston, granting a franchise to university students for 1 year to paint houses. And they had a good brand and they had good systems. And I saw a flyer on the ground that said, "Earn $10,000 and run your own business." I said, "Fucking A, that's for me." So I decided, I got in, I got awarded a franchise. I signed a 67-page franchise agreement, which terrified me. You know, bought my trucks and ladders and started to hire people and paint houses. And we, I think that first summer, painted about 100 homes. I had 10 employees. Did that for 3 summers, and then I joined the head office to start coaching and recruiting, training, and coaching franchisees for them. Over 4 years, I recruited, trained, and coached 120 franchisees that reported to me. And one of those was Kimball Musk, who was Elon's brother. Mm-hmm. Another one was Peter Reeve, who built Solar City. They both reported to me in 1993, so I taught them how to run companies. And that was really what I would call my real world MBA, because we had 4 months to go out and recruit and sign 800 franchises. So imagine signing 800 franchisees in 4 months. And then we had 3 months to train them, to get them all completely up to speed. And then those 800 franchisees hired 8,000 painters in a month. We had to train him to do that. And then in 4 months, we produced $64 million in house painting. And then September 1st, all of them quit and went back to university. We would get drunk. We'd wake up September 2nd and we would do it again. So I did that for 4 years. So I was in the top 30 people of an organization that had to hire 8,800 people every year. So when you're starting to do that, you become operationally world-class at recruiting, interviewing, selection, onboarding, training, and the leadership development of people. In fact, I launched a course recently called Invest in Your Leaders, and the whole Invest in Your Leaders course are the systems that we use to grow our franchisees and that I use to grow franchisees at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and they're probably a big part of my coaching programs as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, without going into full detail, because certainly the call to action would be get the course, but can you share some nuggets there? Because I'm looking at this from a franchising perspective, and there's tons of value, right? You know, paint-by-numbers business, but recruiting, hiring, training, developing. I mean, these are just fundamental from a franchising world, but just really any business that our audience is definitely going to, you know, take on that endeavor. So can you share some insights and basically into that world?
Yeah, so, you know, I think at the end of the day, most businesses train people on what we do. Like, we train you on painting a house. We train you on running a fitness program. We train you on running a fitness business, right? But we don't train them on leadership and all the people skills and all the executive functioning skills. So my Invest in Your Leaders course covers things like coaching, delegation, time management, conflict management, problem solving, project management, classroom teaching, interviewing, effective meetings, right? It's all of the skills that every leader needs to be really good at their job of what they do. And that's the stuff that most companies don't train people on. So I packaged it in a way that it's just, you know, pre-test videos, written information, and post-test to let people train their managers and leaders so they can then go and grow the company.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Cameron, from my perspective, being in the fitness realm, what we teach our ownership is, you know, primarily we're not in the fitness business. We're not in the health or nutrition business. Primarily, we are in the people business. And if you focus on that, then of course, that's the foundation for success. So that just really reinforces that point.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My 18-year-old or soon to be 18-year-old son is working in the trucks now at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It's funny. And on his second day of hauling junk, I said, what do you think it's all about? And he said, nothing to do with junk removal. It's all about our engagement with the customer. I'm like, damn, you get it, man. Right? It's all about connecting with that customer to make them feel good about having all that stuff removed. Because at the end of the day, they're paying for nothing. Right? There's nothing left after the job is done. In fact, we took it all away. So they have to feel good about the fact that we swept up and we cleaned up and we made it easy for them. And all they had to do was point. Because at times they wonder, well, that was simple. Well, it wasn't simple. Like, you know, we had to show up with a truck and take it away. So they make a big deal out of the connection with the customer, which gives us the repeat business and the spin-off word of mouth.
Yeah, it's huge. How interesting, though, life comes full circle. Now your son is, you know, working for the organization. That's too funny. I would be remiss if I didn't ask. We just kind of glossed over. I guess I punched in the intro, and then you talked about, you know, coaching and developing business framework for Kimball Musk, Elon Musk's brother. Now, this is, I think you said early 90s, so this is before Elon Musk and even all his whole family. Kimball, his mom, I mean, they're like literally a family of success. But when you have Elon, you know, in the basically shining light, I guess all the other successes are a little bit in the shadow. But can you tell a little bit about the experience working with Kimball, like what that was like, and, you know, share a little detail there?
Yeah, and I was actually a reference for Elon and Kimball in their very first round of funding for their first company, Zip2, in January of 1995. So they had one employee, they were living in the Bay Area, they were building a company at the time called Zip2, which was a mapping business, and they needed to understand why the investor wanted to know why should they invest, because Elon was not backable. He was too big of a thinker. He'd never done anything. So they really wanted to understand the college pro painter's experience that Kimball brought to the table with operations and sales and marketing and people management and hiring, so that they could back something, because all it was a vision, but there's no, you know, depth to that idea. So I've known those guys for a long, long time. Kimball is an extraordinary people person, great charm and charisma, not Asperger's at all. Definitely high functioning. You know, Elon's ridiculously high functioning, but
right.
You can actually have more of a connection with Kimball at the just a personal level, sitting over a beer and chatting with him. Elon's tougher to, you know, in my conversations with him, he's tougher to connect with because he's usually in his head or he's computing something. He's either computing what he's talking to you about or there's some other calculation running around.
Yeah, totally.
And then his cousin, Peter Reeve, is completely different, right? Peter was a very tough franchisee for me to manage. He wasn't that strong. He didn't have the natural charm and charisma, and I probably didn't give him credit for his ability to actually just execute on the systems, right? So we just taught him the systems, and he was able to at least, you know, make a go of it with his business.
Interesting. And he went on to start SolarCity because I know it was funded or at least backed or somehow Elon Musk is involved with that. And that's kind of how the connection was.
Yeah, well, they're cousins. So Peter Reeve and Lyndon Reeve, his brother, Lyndon was CEO, Peter was COO. They went on to build out SolarCity. Elon, or I don't know if it was Elon or Tesla, was an original backer of that. And then when they were failing in terms of being able to scale, Elon bought them out and took the company over and kind of merged it all in with the Tesla. So that was a bit of a Hail Mary saving for the brand. But yeah, they built that one out.
Interesting.
By the way, when Elon and Kimball sold Zip2, this is prior to Elon joining Peter Thiel to do PayPal.
PayPal, yeah.
They sold Zip2 for $315 million in cash to Compaq, I think it was, in an all-cash acquisition. It was the largest all-cash acquisition in tech history. So, you know, they were very, very successful. And people don't even know of Zip2. You know, but that's really, other than SpaceX, that's really the only company he started. He didn't start Tesla. He bought it from Ian Wright and Martin Eberhard. He was an investor in Tesla, and he bought them out to then run it. He didn't start PayPal. Peter Thiel did. He joined Peter, and then he started SpaceX. So, you know, they forget about the one company that really set them up for all the success. And that was the entrepreneurial venture.
Yeah, interesting. And I'm a huge student of Elon Musk. He's, you know, literally to me, if I could meet one person in the world, it'd be him.
Well, if you read his biography, the College Pro Painters is mentioned in his biography. And that's because of me and the introductions and the original. So Kimball called me the night that I did the phone call with the venture capital firm. And he said, I don't know what you told them. And I said, oh, my God, did I screw it up? He goes, no. He said, we asked for $600,000. They gave us $3 million. And that was in January of 95. And that was a lot of money back in 95.
That's a lot of money today. But to that point, it's interesting because, you know, studying Elon Musk and all that, I always find it so fascinating. Zip2, and I didn't know the exact figure. I knew it was, you know, well over $100 million. But like for any mere mortal, that would be like the highlight of their career, of his career. But little do we all know, or I guess we all do know that, you know, he went on obviously to create and I guess partner and continue to run all these incredible companies.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I think it is their complete kind of relentless and drive and focus is one thing that gets them there. You know, they are completely maniacally focused for sure.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, to put a bow on this and before we transition to the last kind of big topic I want to hit, which is the COO Alliance, you know, unpacking, you know, this because specifically our world is franchising. Our audience is interested in fitness. Again, entrepreneurship and franchising can be an incredible vehicle. So, you know, putting a bow on your experience, what were the big takeaways from like the franchising model, the leadership model, the training model that really could resonate with some of our audience who maybe don't have experience in any of these endeavors?
Sure. And I just had to double check my facts. It was $305 million that Compaq paid in 1999 to acquire Zip2. So 4 years later. And at the time, Elon and Kimball, Elon had $22 million in stock and Kimball had $15 million in stock. So they did very, very well, you know, with that money. So I guess the big lessons and learnings from, you know, my businesses or the takeaways would be, one is that a person can only sit on one toilet at a time. If you try to sit on more than one toilet, it gets kind of messy. You know, you have to stay focused. You can't run one, two, three businesses. You can get one up and running and put a team in place before you can start business number two, but you have to stay focused to be successful, right? If you take light and you disperse it, it'll light up a room. But if you highly focus light, it compresses, it becomes like a laser and it can cut through metal and, you know, wood and glass and rock. So you have to focus your energy. Second is we really only have three inputs. We have our people, our time, and money, like the number of weeks and days in front of us and money. You need to get the highest return on investment for those three inputs. So it's always looking as to what are we doing and can I get the highest and fastest ROI from that? Perfection doesn't create any growth. It's really about momentum, creating more momentum, and that's where your growth comes. Another one is just really obsessing about, you know, your employees and really making sure that you obsess about them. I think if you stay really focused on that, you'll be successful. And the last part is remembering that none of this actually matters. You know, this is just what we do to make money. We're all just walking each other home.
I love that, Cameron. I'm a passionate guy, but you know, when I hear this feedback and specifically the last point, it humbles me to kind of put things in perspective. And I think that's probably a good lens to view the world and really your profession and our time here on Earth.
It's true, man, because the reality is this is just what we do to make money. And for our employees, the same thing, right? We have to remember that at the end of the day, our employees are all struggling with something. Our franchisees are all struggling with something outside of work. They're struggling with a relationship with their spouse or their kids, with financials, their parents, struggling with health issues, struggling with just like, what the fuck is this whole world all about? Mm-hmm. You know, they're all struggling with something. And if we connect with them more as humans, they'll go through brick walls for us to build the company.
Yeah, totally. And that just speaks to me a lot because, like I said, I'm a passionate guy on the mission, on my vision, on my values. And it's a good reminder to sometimes take a step back, laugh at yourself, don't take it too seriously because, you know, it's all going to end at some point anyway, right? Not to be too grim, but that's the reality of life that we live in.
That's all it is, man.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Well, last topic I want to transition to, and again, is your role as a coach. You've provided incredible value to me and our organization. You've launched the CEO Alliance, launched your podcast, and you know, I've connected with some pretty, you know, very high-end, high-level, well, CEOs and COOs. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, that project and what it looks like?
Sure. So the COO Alliance was started because there was all of these great groups for entrepreneurs. You know, there were franchise organizations for entrepreneurs. There was EO and Vistage and YPO and Genius Network and Baby Bathwater, all these amazing organizations that catered to the entrepreneur. And there were organizations for lawyers and engineers and doctors and marketers, but there was never a place for that second in command to go and spend time with each other without the distraction of the CEO and founder being around. So we have members that have the COO title, the president title, the VP ops title, it doesn't matter, as long as they're truly the second in command to the entrepreneur. And it's an organization where we meet online every month. They have a 3-hour event online every month. We've got members now from 17 countries around the world. We have 3 in-person events during the year that you can pay to come to those as well. But yeah, it's just an organization where they get to spend time working on their skills and coming up with new systems to actually scale their company as well. And then the Second Command podcast was started just as a way to get the rest of the story. We hear the stories of the entrepreneurs, but I want to know the rest of the story. I want to know how they really built the company. And often that's the COO giving us some of the inside scoop on how these amazing brands are getting built.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say within, I guess, not necessarily the podcast, but the Alliance, what are the big breakthroughs or takeaways that you see on one hand, right? And the flip side, what are the common struggles or just common challenges that, you know, business owners face that really are, you know, across all industries that our audience could kind of get some insight and value to?
Well, one of the big ones that entrepreneurs struggle with is focus, right? Most entrepreneurs are ADD. They're very bipolar, so they're very manic and lots of energy and enthusiasm, and they come up with all these great ideas they want to start right away. So they're perpetual motion machines, right? That are just go, 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 go. Their problem for them with that, though, is that they're causing too many disruptions. All of those ideas are causing ripple effects and waves in the organization that are sometimes hurting themselves. So the COOs just think differently. So for entrepreneurs, at some point, you need to bring in that second in command to help you scale the company. Before you do that, though, you need to hire an executive assistant, right? If you don't have an EA, you are one, and you really want to get an assistant to get a lot of this stuff off your plate and then hire the second in command afterwards. But that would be one starting point. The other one is just to remember that you think differently. Entrepreneurs think differently than others in the organization. They see things completely differently. You know, it's funny. I'll show you a picture right now and it'll illustrate the point, but I'm going to show you a book. What color is this book?
It's hard to see, but white.
White. Are you 100% sure it's white? Because you're looking at it. Yeah, it's white, right?
Yes, it's white.
Are you sure? I just flipped the book. Right, it's black. You just told me it was white. What color is the book, Bryce? See, one side of the book is black and one side of the book is white. And you're going to argue with me that it's white. I'm going to tell you it's black. Most entrepreneurs see the problem through a very different lens than the employees do. And we need to recognize that they need different information than we do to make decisions. So sometimes entrepreneurs need to slow down to communicate differently. They need to be able to let their employees ask questions without getting defensive. Most COOs like to ask 7 or 8 questions before they start a project. And the entrepreneur tends to get frustrated thinking that we're arguing with them. We're not arguing at all. We're just trying to catch up. And if the entrepreneur would give us 5 minutes to ask enough questions, we'd be able to run with the project at the same speed, and then we'd never have to go back and bug them. Likewise, when employees go to the entrepreneur, we need to give them the executive summary. Give them the bottom line first, and if they want to ask more questions later, they will. But we tend to want to give them all the information. They don't have room in their hard drive for all that information. Their brain is full. So you need to talk to them differently. So that's something that struggles across all industries is CEOs and COOs and employees are just very different animals.
Ooh. Cameron, that is gold. Audience, if you don't have a business and you're about to jump in and really take the coaching, that is gold, because in my, you know, it, which pales in comparison to you, Cameron, but my 10 plus years of business acumen, you know, the perspective, the way you just talked about communicating upwards to a CEO versus, you know, the other side of the coin, that is just spot on. So I really, really hope our audience just really, you know, rewinds and hits that clip again, because that is so true. Totally. All right, Mr. Harold, you've been so gracious with your time. I know we have a few minutes left. I want to transition to the lightning round if you're up for it. All right. For our audience listening at home, what would you say is one big, unique value bomb? And you've shared a lot already. Something that an entrepreneur or a business owner should know, but maybe they don't. From your perspective, what would be one big value bomb that you could share?
No one cares about perfect. Good is good enough. Like, the reality is no one has ever asked for your university transcript to see your A+ grades. No one needs every project or process to be an A+. A B- is good enough, and momentum will create momentum. So you've heard of minimum viable product. I call it minimum viable everything. Just get it done and get it out the door, because that momentum will create momentum.
Cool. Awesome. What has been your lowest entrepreneur moment or business moment in your life? How'd you overcome it? Really, what was the lesson there?
You know, I could talk about getting fired by my best friend, but there's not as big of a lesson in there. I'll talk about how I was really growing my business very, very quickly, and I didn't have an eye on the financials, and I was making so much money and so much profit that I started spending it really quickly on a home renovation, buying a new home, taking trips, really kind of growing fast. And then all of a sudden my accountant told me I owed $420,000 more in tax than I thought I did. And I went, holy shit, like, where am I going to get that money from? So I had to figure out in 3 months how to make $420,000 in profit. And it was a great lesson, because it taught me the focus of, you know, what can I focus on to grow revenue? What can I focus on to grow gross margin? What can I focus on to cut my overhead? Where can I cut personal spending? And I got super highly focused. And then I put the systems in place to be able to manage that ongoing afterwards. So it was a huge lesson from a big gulp. And I did get it done.
Good work. All right. Next up, passion. And I kind of talked to you about, and you know this from me, I'm a passionate guy. I love fitness. I love, you know, coaching and helping people. Cameron, from your perspective, from all your credentials and kind of where you're currently going, what's the biggest source of passion in your life today?
Travel. I'm actually in the process of moving my personal tax base to Barbados, moving a company to Barbados, and being able to start living globally. I'll be living in different cities around the world for 2 months of every quarter, and then back in North America 1 month per quarter. So literally legally being off the grid, and we're going to be starting to live in Florence in mid-September for the first kind of 6 weeks of the fall.
Good on you. And this is something we didn't talk about, but obviously being friends on social, you were just in Mexico City. I feel like you had a great trip there. What was that all about?
I'm obsessed with vacations right now. By the end of August, I'll have taken 12 weeks vacation since January 1st. So Mexico was just a 3.5 week road trip with my girlfriend, where we wanted to see some of the interior cities and villages of towns in Mexico that people don't normally go to. We normally think of Mexico as all the beach towns and coastal yep. cities, but Mexico has some incredible interior towns and villages. So we spent 3.5 months exploring those.
Beautiful. All right. Next up, before all the success, the Cameron Harold that we're sitting in front of today or listening to today, think back to your younger self. What was, you know, one big obstacle in your way? What was holding you back from being the guy you are to now, and how did you overcome that?
Well, one was thinking, you know, the school system really messed us up and told us we had to be the smartest person. We had to work hard and memorize all the information. So what really held me back was that, because you don't have to be the smartest person. You just have to know who they are. You don't have to know all the information. You just have to know how to find it or know the person that can find it. So it was allowing myself to delegate more and outsource more and hire freelancers more and to get other smart people doing the stuff so that the business would scale and stop doing it myself.
Awesome. All right. Next up, you being an expert coach and, you know, coaching, consulting many different, very successful organizations, CEOs, you give great coaching advice. What would you say was one of the best pieces of advice that you've ever received and why?
Well, that I've ever received is to listen twice as often as I talk. You know, God gave us two ears and one mouth and we should use them in that ratio. We don't listen to our employees enough. We don't listen to our customers enough. We don't listen to our leadership team enough, especially CEOs. We tend to talk and bowl over people. And if you're going to have these smart people working for you, you got to listen to them more than you talk to them.
Awesome. Next up, leaders are readers. And you're an incredible author that has put out a lot of great content for people like me to read. What would be your best book recommendation? And I'll stop quick for a quick second. My book recommendation on this podcast would be Vivid Vision by you, because again, just reinforcing that, it's just been so game-changing for me and my leadership and my business. But aside from the incredible, you know, books that you put out, what would be a book recommendation that would really speak and our audience would get value from?
I'll give two. The first one is The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. And it's written in sound bites, you know, 3-page chapters that's very easy to digest. And it's about how the internet companies grew in times of crisis and fast growth and some really great take homes in that. The second one is Insanely Simple. And it's about the 10 principles around simplicity that they used inside of Apple to build such an incredible organization and yet keep it simple. You know, Apple has never been a corporate giant hairball, right? It's never been this bureaucratic mess. It's just a very kind of lean, high growth. And there's some really, really great take homes in there for every business as well.
Awesome. Cameron, I got one more question left. This has been incredible and we appreciate you so much. You've dropped a lot of good value and knowledge bombs. What would you say, you know, for our audience who are interested in fitness, interested in becoming entrepreneurs, you know, entering into the business space, what would be a last piece of parting advice that will help them in their pursuit of business?
You're never going to get it all done, right? You'll never get your to-do list done. So stop working at night and on weekends to catch up, because you're never going to catch up. Give yourself like the 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 or 9 to 4 every day that you work, and work really hard and focused, and then disconnect hard. As soon as you and I are done, I'm done. I'm done for the day, going to the gym to work out with a trainer, disconnecting, having some dinner, hanging out with friends. Like, I won't work at all this weekend. I literally am off the grid and disconnect, because you're always gonna set more goals. You'll build something bigger. So you're never gonna catch up anyway. So stop lying to yourself and get a life.
Amen to that. Cameron, where can our audience connect with you at?
Yeah, if they listen to the Second in Command podcast, all of my information is at thecameronherold.com, and it's H-E-R-O-L-D. All 5 of my books are available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. The Invest in Your Leaders course, for sure. They should go there, investinyourleaders.com, but they'll find me.
Beautiful. Well, Cameron, before we shoot today, I just want to thank you for being the show, but more importantly, just thank you for being the guy that you are, this incredible mentor and business coach to me, to our brand, to all the, you know, followers and really the people that you've impacted. And most importantly, which I love working with you, and really one thing that I love about you is you just say it how it is. You mean what you say what you mean, and I derive a lot of value from that, and I know our audience will as well. So I want to acknowledge you for that. And again, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks very much for having me, Bryce. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, friends, I know you got a ton of value today. So assuming that you did, go ahead and like and subscribe on our YouTube channel, and then write us an awesome review on iTunes. That way we can keep producing this incredible content for you for free. And that's all for today. Thanks you again. And again, thank you, Cameron.
You're welcome. Thanks, Bryce.